All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 62 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. I think after the heat we suffered over the last few days that came bursting through with thunderstorms, I think it's going to cool back off a little bit here and get pretty comfortable, which is good for me. So where do we leave off yesterday? We looked at a lot of different technical things going on. We looked at how adults now have an attention span less than a goldfish. Of course, we blame that on our smartphones as well as that whole dopamine addiction that we spent weeks talking about. We also looked at a couple documents that came out showing how all of the alphabet agencies have had a back door for a long time. I've been saying that forever. I mean, when we first started doing radio here back 3 years ago, it's got to be pretty close. I think August 19th is a 3-year anniversary of broadcasting at UCY.TV. We had covered a story that came out of either the New York Times or one of the other, I think it was the New York Times. It was one of the New York City newspapers that was very mainstream, but surprised me that they had talked about federal agencies that had been going to these private, quote-unquote, hacking companies to build software to open up back doors, and a lot of the software that they had exposed was using a flash vulnerability. Now, anyone who uses the internet knows that flash is probably the biggest pain in the butt as far as requiring upgrades over and over. But did you ever think as to why it keeps requiring upgrades? I know people say that, you know, they're careful about downloading a flash upgrade when they're on some unknown website, but they will go to Adobe's website and they will download the actual file. Well, who's to say, have we ever heard any type of public statement from Adobe saying that they are not working with the alphabet agencies? Or how do we know that some of these third-party companies don't have an API, an application programming interface, into Adobe so they can take these tools and open up or exploit a security vulnerability? Because I think that that's kind of what they've been doing. And as I watch, you know, your browser will just stop working and everything breaks one day, and then you see a day or two later, it's like, oh, you need an Adobe upgrade. I just saw a story, actually. Let me go there really quick, because Firefox, Adobe, I think it was security risk. I just saw a story where Firefox had blocked Flash because there was, here we go, one day ago, Firefox had blocked Adobe Flash because of security concerns, and it kind of makes you raise an eyebrow when you see stuff like this, because nobody else was blocking it. And when we've read other stories talking about security agencies using pieces of software, using Flash vulnerabilities, using Flash and fake files, this is this hacking team. The fallout of the hacking team is hitting Adobe hard. So this was out of that story we read yesterday. This is exactly why Firefox blocked Flash. The fallout of the hacking team is hitting Adobe hard, and the leak has revealed two unpatched vulnerabilities in the company's ubiquitous and ubiquitously disliked Flash player. Because it took Adobe a while to patch these, wink, Mozilla decided to block all versions of Firefox Flash for Firefox users. Now, I actually had somebody leave a comment for me on one of the shows saying, why did you remove all of your players on your website? I used to listen to your show live. And I'm wondering if that isn't what happened, that maybe that listener was accessing the show and the UCY website utilizing Firefox, and Firefox blocked all Flash. My player runs in Flash on the website, so that could be why. Adobe today released a final version of the Flash patch, but Firefox may have to manually update their Flash installs to get a new version, assuming that they actually ever want to use Flash again. And I know I'm thinking about that. Maybe we're going to have to discover a new type of player that we can do some stuff with, because I was not very happy with any of this at all. This marks the second time in a week that Adobe had to patch a Flash vulnerability because of the hacking team leak. We listened to that video. Actually, we should play that one more time. Just to refresh everybody's memory. Here, let's listen to the hacking team. Hold on one second.
Sensitive data is transmitted over encrypted channels. Often the information you want is not transmitted at all. Your target may be outside your monitoring domain. Is passive monitoring enough? You need more. You want to look through your target's eyes. You have to hack your target.
Ding, ding. Says, while your target is browsing the web, exchanging documents, receiving SMS, which is your text messaging, or crossing the borders, which who the hell knows what that... Oh, crossing the borders between countries, I betcha. Windows, OS X, so anyone who thought that their iPhone or their Macintoshes were secure, iOS, Android, BlackBerry, and Symbian even, and Linux, ding!
You have to overcome encryption and capture relevant data.
Overcome encryption, of course, we just saw that there was an Israeli firm that had come up with some $300 little PETA device, you remember that one, up under the table or whatever, and they can use radio waves off of your processor to be able to pull your encryption keys directly out of the air. I mean, this is beyond insane. And this hacking team, who are these people? I really want to know. We need to dig into who this company is and who they're financed by and what. I know that I think they're in a different country. Hold on. Well, we'll look at it. I want to listen to the rest of this video. Anyway, under the encryption section, it says Skype and encrypted calls, target location, messaging, relationships, web browsing, audio, and video. Those are all the things that they are unencrypting. Skype and encrypted calls, by the way, is the very top one. So here we go. Anyone who doubts that Skype conversations aren't being scanned and we're having issues, let's say, when keywords are said, think again, because I'm certain that they have the ability to do that, and they have for a long time. It's just becoming public now. I do like the music.
Stealth and untraceable.
Immune to any protection system. Hidden collection infrastructure. Up to hundreds of thousands of targets managed from a single spot.
Exactly what we do. Remote control system DaVinci. The hacking suite for governmental interception.
I mean, there was only a matter of time before some commercialized VAR bought themselves lots of black hat hackers that then they put to work to find vulnerabilities and everything and give them the upper hand in the cyber patrol. This is as a service, it looks like. We bundled spy software, we packaged it up for government use, and now they're spinning this shit to all the governments on the planet. So anybody who ever thought that stuff was secure, you have another thing coming, because it absolutely is not. And to evidence that, like, talk about massive oops. Check this out. If you ever thought anything was secure and that some of the underhanded or creepy stuff that you do on the internet people aren't going to find out about, know that that is going into your dossier, by the way. Everything you do, everywhere you go, everyone you communicate with, know that someday that may be exposed to blackmail you for something. You know what I mean? Think about it, because Everything. There's no doubt. People used to say, you're crazy, Julie. They can't do that stuff. You're paranoid. No, I'm not paranoid. And we've discovered now that it is beyond our wildest dreams. Sexual fantasies exposed. Online cheating site Ashley Madison hacked. 37 million users affected. The Ashley Madison cheating website has been hacked by, quote, an unauthorized party, the company said. The Team Impact hackers reportedly then posted large amounts of data from the hookup site online, potentially affecting about 37 million unfaithful partners. Quote, we were recently made aware of an attempt to access data by an unauthorized party who gained access to our systems, Avid Life Media Inc., which owns the site, said in a statement. The company added that they have been able, quote, to secure sites and close unauthorized access points, but we are working with law enforcement agencies, oh my God, which are investigating this criminal act. Any and all parties responsible for this act of cyber terrorism will be held responsible. The service whose slogan is, hey, life is short, have an affair. That's actually a good tagline, just from a marketing perspective. Has seen a large amount of data stolen, said Krebs Online, adding that the link compromised the company's user database, financial records, and other proprietary information. Now, I'm looking to see if they listed it here in the other story that I saw. The hackers were threatening to post credit card numbers and tie them back to the user with their home addresses, which is unbelievable. If I were anybody who had anything like this on any site like this that was tied to a credit card number that was tied to my home address, holy shit, would I be shitting my pants right now. Thank goodness I don't use stuff like this. But I'm just going to warn you people, this is one example of ways now that they're going to come down on a lot of people and have a lot of dirt. I mean, have we not seen that same modus operandi many times? Well, they will come out and smear you beyond belief to make certain that whatever their agenda is that you're trying to throw a wrench into, they discredit it to the point where your voice does not matter and you've just sacrificed yourself like a sacrificial lamb. Well, they're going to do that to all of us. Now, remember, this hacking, too, all of these high-profile hackings are meant to make you afraid. And when you're afraid, you're going to open your arms to these government agencies that are trying to combat every teenager living in their parents' basement playing video games who's self-radicalized on that pesky internet, as well as ISIS, because they're using all kinds of different technical capabilities to pass messages. And so let's get rid of all encryption. Let's make sure we hand all of our security from government security, which, of course, the government has shown how absolutely incompetent they are with security, with the Office of Professional Management, massive breach. But let's hand it all over now in this public and private partnership with some of the big boys at the helm, talking about Google, Microsoft, IBM. We're going to look again, continue where we left off yesterday in regards to that $3 billion investment into the Internet of Things. But nothing is secure. Everything that you are doing right now, everyone that you communicate with, is becoming a matter of permanent record to be able to be brought up at some point in your future or in your children's future, who knows, for the time when that red target is directly over you and they need to take you out because you stood up and said something. Okay, I really, really, truly believe that is absolutely 100% of what is happening here. All right, let's get back to now. Now that we've established nothing is secure and everything is becoming a part of big data now, part of the algorithm where they can scan you, slice and dice you, and put you into the database. We're going to look at IBM's $3 billion investment in the Internet of Things. It says, bring on big data and internet-connected everything. And one of the things we talked about before is how in the future with nanotechnology and the way they're integrating nano into vaccinations especially, and then we just read about a few days back maybe that was yesterday as well, about that 7-nanometer IBM brand new processor that had overcome Moore's law for getting smaller and faster. They thought they were reaching a terminal limit, and they've now overcome it. And with a printing method for printing these chips, but they are just a few times larger than a strand of DNA, okay? And they are going to be the fastest processor in existence. How insane is that? Think about with that type of power, and I'm sure that they can put wireless on it, the part of the biopharma complex, because you have Watson, who is now running the healthcare plan for Veterans Hospital. They're also working on with Watson in medicinal databases, where Watson is trying to sort out some black box uses for different medications by scanning the database and trying to find different uses for the chemicals so they can, you know, find other streams of revenue, other ways to test you, you know, other ways to get free research and development by testing it on the guinea pigs. Well, Watson, the same IBM artificial intelligence system, I am absolutely certain is going to be figuring into this Internet of Things, and this investment into the Internet of Things tells me that at some point they are going to get even our cells, our individual cells, into a surveillance database, where with the Internet of Things, where they went from IPv4 and took it to IPv6, where now we have millions and millions, if not billions, of more IP addresses to put every object onto the internet, onto the grid, that it will be full body surveillance for, oh, to keep you healthy, to keep you safe. But in the meantime, keeping you healthy and keeping you safe means they know everything you've ingested, and whether or not you took your good obedience medication. You know, think Buck Rogers in the 21st century, Agenda 21, white room, sterile, controlled, mind-controlled, you know, utopia. That is not where I want to end up. And IBM Watson combining itself with the Internet of Things, DARPA, that freaking Regina Duggan with her smartphone Samsung Motorola connection, and then Ray Kurzweil is the head of engineering for Google, Microsoft on every desktop just about in the world, and now this hacking team with backdoors using vulnerabilities, hacker crackers gone white hat for the government, traitors. That's traitorship, I would say. I mean, those, I can't even get into that, but it's really horrifying. It's really horrifying that the people who had always been fighting for liberty in the Wild West of the internet took the dangling carrot, because I'm sure they're paying them handsomely, took that dangling carrot over what's right for the future. They're bringing in this crackdown, lockdown on every single one of us, and they're helping them to do it. How is that any different than past war crimes that we've seen happen on a mass basis? These are war crimes, people. It's a cyber war. All right, let's get back here. IBM to invest $3 billion on the Internet of Things. If you need more proof that there will be bundles of business opportunities opened up by the Internet of Things. Now, guys, you know I've been in technology for a really long time, and I'm not right now. I'm doing my own thing with my knowledge of technology. But I'm going to tell you what. If I went back into the corporate marketplace, this is why I can't go back. This is, it is the matrix. If you work in technology, you will be helping at some point building a little portion of the matrix, helping usher the matrix in. And I just, my conscience would never allow me to be able to look into my child's eyes and tell her that I did everything that I could. This is wrong. This is all wrong. Internet of Things means that you and I will be connected at such a level that we will be assimilated. All right, where everything from smartphones to coffee makers to cars will be connected via the internet to Wi-Fi. Look no further. Smart, smart, smart. Here we go. Dumb. Computing giant IBM has announced a plan to invest $3 billion over 4 years on a new business aimed at making sense of the immense data that will be generated by swarms of sensor-equipped devices in our homes, offices, and public spaces. And yesterday we also talked about free Wi-Fi off of Comcast routers are going to be turning it on by default on everyone's home internet router. Like, how insane is that? By opening up an unsecured, unencrypted, now what we know, looking at this hacking team and some of the stuff that they've been doing, and the government's talking about wanting to get rid of encryption on different services in the UK because, oh my God, it's too hard to surveil you when you're encrypted and it costs too much to get hacking team services, so let's just stop encryption and call it even. Well, just know that by investing now into this Internet of Things technology, there's probably going to be some new protocol that, of course, is going to be a new secure protocol, wink, 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 that will thwart all these hackers and all these high-profile hacks that you've been seeing for the last, 2 years. How interesting. It's only been the last few years that we've just been getting hit one after the other in some sort of organized attempt. Yes, maybe it is other governments and their cyber patrols, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's orchestrated from our ends, because I know that General Keith Alexander and the NSA and his whole setup of the cyber patrol with all the military, and look into it, because it's true, we did lots of shows on it in the very beginning. I believe we spent 3 days on a wired expose on Keith Alexander and all the branches of the military and how cyber patrol had become a part of global warfare. But we don't have time to go into that now. Let's get back to IBM. Good old IBM and Mr. Watson, who started IBM, who actually built the system that was running the train cars in Nazi Germany. Yes, that IBM. The Internet of Things refers to the growing network of sensors and internet-connected devices around us. Yes, and the IBM that launched the massive biometrics program, I believe it was 1.2 billion people, billion with a B, in India for biometrics and cashless society, universal ID cards, the UID. But this gets even scarier. Remember, we talked about this at the very end of the show yesterday. Enchanted objects. I want to look at enchanted objects. Enchanted objects, as the below video calls them, are ordinary things that have the same functionality that they did before, except now they can talk and they are connected. Can anyone see a Jibo umbrella? All right, let's check this out. I want to hear this video.
Enchanted objects are ordinary things that have the same functionality that they had before, except now they can talk. They're connected. These are ordinary things that have extraordinary capabilities.
When we're creating technology for the home, really we want to make something that's seamless and transparent, and that, as opposed to having things sort of call out and draw your attention to it, make it a more ambient experience.
We'll just continue to behave with those everyday objects as we do in the world.
I got to stop for a second. On the wall, they showed a Google doorbell. So I'm not quite sure what that is. And now this dude that's talking is a researcher at MIT Media Labs. And we all know MIT is a pit of vipers in all of this.
And we can remain focused on connectivity between two people.
What we're seeing now is this...
It's a Skype cabinet. You open up a little door on your bookcase, and it opens up. The door glows when receiving a call, and you open it up, and here's a little TV screen with Nana's face in it.
Proliferation of different devices that are, you know, moving out from the cell phone and onto our bodies and into the world.
Onto our bodies, yes! Wearable electronics have come a long way, baby.
So in the middle of our living room is a coffee table that has Google Earth embedded in the coffee table. And I just found that having access to this amazing zoomable map completely changes how often we talk about travel.
Yes, Google Earth on a coffee table, touchscreen, flat panel. that looks very much like Microsoft Surface Computing that they've tried to get off the ground many times in the past before, and it's failed every time. They were super expensive. I remember them being like $10,000 or $15,000 when they first tried to launch them, probably back in the late 90s, I would say, early 2000s.
And how often we talk about the world, and how often we look up places that are mentioned. And it's really, it's nice to have, you know, this beautiful, large reference object, you know, sitting in the middle of our living space. Our
device. I'm not saying that it's bad. It looks pretty cool, but it is the amalgamation between Microsoft and Google.
This can be a lot simpler, and the interaction to them can be a lot simpler. The internet-connected umbrella can just be an umbrella that only shows whether it's going to rain.
Oh my God, so it's hanging like on a hook next to the door as you're going outside, and if it senses in the humidity, if the forecast is calling for rain, a little sequence of light around the base of the umbrella flashes, so as you're leaving, it reminds you to grab the umbrella. Oh my God, talk about the coming of augmented reality, because our puny human brains can't remember anything anymore.
You don't need to tap on an icon or do anything that seems sort of artificial.
Our enchanted objects are coming alive.
Come from a time in which we need to adapt to our homes and not the other way around. So what if our home could be a platform that we personalize and we...
Glow caps remind you to take prescriptions, and it's a cap on top of the pill bottle that'll glow when it's time.
Customize. The key is, how do we create this ecosystem, these technologies that allow us to move from one experience to the other in the most magical way?
City home, modular homes that homeowners can manipulate, so you can just have a small little area, slide out the dining table and the kitchen area, and then slide them back in and pull out the bed after all your guests leave. Oh my God! And the room was all white, like I was saying, Buck Rogers in the 21st century, Agenda 21. Love your tiny homes and no trees, because hey, there's infectious ticks in all them there woods.
Some people might think that a connected home is overwhelming, that there'll be so much information in the connected home that it's just a cacophonous environment and you wouldn't want to live there. But I think about how we decorate our homes today. We put photographs everywhere, we put paintings up, we put post-it notes up. You know, there's a lot of decoration and adornment in the home. And I think if enchanted objects can be designed in the right way, we're going to want hundreds of them around us.
I think what we're going to see is a new renaissance where designers as well as computer scientists are going to really make a really big impact in the type of technology that we see in the home.
The history of computers has mostly been about efficiency. I think one of the things that's changing is that enchanted objects can be about adding motion and add magic to the fabric of our everyday lives and experiences.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It definitely, definitely is cool, but talk about scary. I mean, sucking you right into the Matrix and putting these devices now, these friendly little automated remote Wi-Fi sensing, detecting, surveillance devices all over your home, so it can track when it's time to take your medication, and it can probably even spit you out a couple pills at some point in the future in your 3D printed replicator when it is time for you to take your medication, let's say. All right, I want to finish reading a little bit of the rest of the story. So these are called enchanted objects. So these go beyond the smart technology. These actually interact with you versus just providing you information. These so-called enchanted objects include things like smartwatches, well, there you go, and other wearable technologies, home electronics and appliances, cars, or even something as simple as an umbrella, which lights up when it's going to rain. A conservative estimate from the analyst firm Gartner Group, and they were always like one of the future indicators we looked at in the technology market for trying to plot future sales, were the Gartner four quadrants to show what's going to be hot and what's not in the next year. A conservative estimate from the analyst firm Gartner suggested there would be 26 billion, with a B, connected devices by 2020, but some people estimate that number to be much higher, possibly closer to 100 billion devices. And that's just by 2020, which is only 5 years from now, believe it or not. In addition to making our homes of the future super slick, we're totally jealous of the MIT guy's apartment in this video, and this is what I was mentioning. A way more automated Internet of Things is going to generate data, and lots of it. The new IBM business unit will rely on a software they call the Internet of Things Foundation. And didn't I say that there was going to be some new protocol that's going to be safe and interoperable and everything will be able to work together, and we'll make sure that the hackers don't get in? And remember, this is now their unified way to bring all the data to, I am certain, in the future, their DNA-based unlimited storage unit that they've been working on. As Jeremy Hugh explains for the IEEE Spectrum, and it's a scientific engineering, electrical engineering publication that I read frequently, it allows partner companies and clients to build new applications or tweak existing apps. So that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to build a foundation like an API, a common interface that programmers can write to and access devices to make them do things. So it's going to be this big, happy, open, exciting new frontier for all these smart people to write all these new applications that what they don't see is enslaving humanity even more. Every exponential step forward that we take with technology is taking away our future ability to run around in a field, on a mountaintop, in the middle of nowhere, with no one knowing or caring where you are or what you're doing, and to be at the privacy and the quiet of your own thoughts with Mother Nature, the sky, and the birds. That will be over forever. All right. Essentially, companies can register hundreds or thousands of devices and use IBM services to collect, manage, visualize, store, and build useful applications with incoming data. So it sounds like it's going to be almost like a Microsoft MSDN subscription, where or like the Google API, where once you learn their language and their reusable modular programming language, you'll be able to slice and dice it anyway and make all kinds of new fancy things using services and executing triggers, let's say. Essentially, companies can... Oh, we already read that. IBM partnered with Twitter last year to help businesses, NGOs, and governments make sense of Twitter-generated data, so they're probably providing some sort of useful dashboard. Now they have announced a similar partnership with the Weather Company, which owns the Weather Channel. As Ron Miller explains for TechCrunch, the Weather Company gathers data from 100,000 weather stations around the world, and over time, it will layer on information from cars and smartphones. The partnership with IBM will help developers build applications to make sense of this data, and the benefactors will range from insurance to transport companies to electricity suppliers and farmers. Yes, the smart farm. With RoboBees from where? MIT and Harvard. But IBM is not alone in its plan to develop, to help developers capitalize on this influx of data. General Electric, oh, the ones who made us get rid of our incandescent, pretty innocuous light bulbs, and now is completely pushing these toxic light bulbs where the manufacturing's all been moved to China, and there are no recycling programs that I've seen en masse that is not preventing all of these new toxic substances from these quote-unquote efficient light bulbs from going into the landfills. General Electric, yes, that General Electric. General Electric also has an Internet of Things, so I wonder if they're going to connect it to their spying light bulbs. A platform called Predix, P-R-E-D-I-X, which is geared at making sense of big data to improve industrial efficiency. And yes, General Electric is also pretty big in the healthcare market with different types of scanners and longevity gear. They also... know if General Electric had the baby tracking system, but there's an entire healthcare, IT healthcare market that's very massive that none of us really pay attention to unless you worked in it and helped put some networks together. It says, and it is predicted that job opportunities across the industry are going to boom in the coming years, with innovative solutions like James Cook University in Australia now offering courses specializing in the Internet of Things. As the first of its kind in Australia, this is certain to attract a lot of interest from students wanting to get ahead in the job market. So we say, and this is not me, this is Science Alert out of Australia, bring it on, big data. Also, cabinets that glow when we're getting a call on Skype so we can open them up and talk to Grandma like she is a teacup, and umbrellas that will let us know that there's a thunderstorm coming. I mean, this is just so beyond insane. The Internet of Things, your enchanted dancing, your enchanted dancing candelabra on your desktop. All right, so one step forward. Now let's take a look at the new Japanese robots. Japan has always kind of been ahead of the curve on robotics and androids. And I mean, I don't know if you've seen some of their most recent, but the androids are looking very, very, very realistic. And it's kind of frightening. People are making these avatars of themselves. And I'm certain they're probably using some sort of like synthetic-y type skin mask stuff and a 3D printer with 230 point or more facial recognition, but they're very uncanny. They look very realistic. Well, now, and how interesting, we have this whole triple meltdown going on in Japan. And one of the stories that I had posted back a while ago on my Fukushima Facts news was about how their population is like completely plummeted, and their whole population is aging. And, you know, as we have these triple meltdowns going on that no one seems to have any clue how to fix, and dropping populations, leave it to Japan. They had said that they were developing robots for that DARPA challenge to fight Fukushima. Well, here we go. Robots are now replacing people. I saw a story a few weeks back about them being greeters in, like, department stores. Well, now there is a hotel. 50% of our jobs will be taken by robots. Here it comes, people. Here it comes. Maybe. Maybe, baby. Robots replace people in Japanese hotels. Yes, yes. Robots welcome guests at the check-in counter, carry baggage, and operate a locker room at a Japanese amusement park hotel. And I don't know if it's going to load. Here we go.
Welcome. Welcome to the Hanel Hotel.
It's a dinosaur.
Welcome to the Robot Hotel, where robots are at your service. They check guests in, carry bags, and operate locker rooms. It's known locally as the Hanel Hotel, which translates from Japanese to the Weird Hotel. It's the brainchild of Hideo Sawada, the CEO of the low-cost travel agent HIS. He said, of course, these robots can't just replace all human labor.
No.
But in terms of being friendly and polite, they're unbeatable. That's why he asked developers to make robots for this hotel. Other technological innovations in the hotel include facial recognition, allowing guests to access their rooms without a hotel key.
Biometrics!
Electricity will be partly powered by solar energy aimed at reducing costs. Sawada said the concept is aimed at travellers on a budget, explaining that he thinks low-cost hotels will become a trend, just as low-cost airlines did.
Low-cost hotels with robots.
7,000 yen, around £35 per night, but will be auctioned to the highest bidder during peak season. The company also runs the Huis Ten Bosch theme park, where the hotel is located. The Weird Hotel will open to the public tomorrow.
Oh my god, it looks like Nightmare from the Wax Museum. Jesus. But here it gets even scarier. Thank you, Leslie, for sending me the story, and also Lady Pitbull. a couple people will sit and said, I thought of you, and why would you think that? Well, here, uh-oh, a robot has just passed the self-awareness test. Yes, roboticists at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Ware, New York, have built a trio of robots that were put through the classic wise men puzzle test of self-awareness, and da-da-da-da, one of them passed. In the puzzle, a fictional king is choosing a new advisor and gathers the three wisest people in the land. He promises the contest will be fair and then puts either a blue or white hat on each of the heads and tells them that the first person to stand up and correctly deduce the color of their own hat will become his new advisor. Selmer Bingsnjorg set up a similar situation for the three robots. Two were prevented from talking. Then all three were asked which one was still able to speak. All attempted to say, I don't know, but only one succeeds, and when it hears its own voice, it understands that it was not silent, saying, sorry, I know now. Which, I don't know, that's some pretty complicated logic, but I kind of get it. However, as we can assume that all three robots were coded the same, technically all three have passed the self-awareness test. Oh, there is actually a video here. It may sound like a pretty simple test for a human, but it is not for a robot. The bot must listen to and understand the question, then hear its own voice saying, I don't know, and then recognize it as distinct from another robot voice, then connect that with the original question to conclude that they had not been silenced. Yes, all this research into the brain is not for naught, because hey, we've now created self-aware freaking robots. Logical puzzles requiring an element of self-awareness like this are essential in building robots and or what? Artificial intelligence that can understand their role in society. By passing many tests of this type, it's hoped that robots will be able to build up a group of human-like abilities that become useful when combined. And fucking scary! Oh my God, people! Do you see where this is going? Like, sometimes technology and mad science gone mad doesn't seem like they connect together, but when you get to this level, I mean, people, if anyone has ever seen Battlestar Galactica, and I'm not necessarily talking about the 1970s version, I'm talking about the one that was in the 2000s, I think, yes, 2000s, with the Cylons. And then the Cylons went from tin cans to skin jobs. That's what's happening right now. And guess what? You're going to become a hybrid skin job. If the plans all work out the way that I see them laying themselves out. Anyway, back to the story before we run out of time. Bingsnjorg's work will be presented at the Roman Conference in Japan, which runs from August 31st to September 4th, 2015. Oh, you want to correct the correct answer for the wise men puzzle? Well, hey, my mouse finger's not working on the touchpad. Only a fair contest would be if they were all the same color. Well, sorry, let's see if this 39-second video does anything. Like, even play. Doesn't matter. It might. While we're waiting for that, I gotta scroll up here because we're running out of time. And says, if the time of robots has come. Oh, here we go. No, it's just someone tapping him on the head. All right. If the time of robots has come, where are the laws to deal with them? We've talked about this before as well. Where is the moral code, like in Isaac Asimov, where they were forbidden to injure humans, I believe. I think there was a star, What was that called? Oh, shit, I don't have chat open either. Well, you know what I'm talking about. I think there was a code in there, too, but not many of them, because many robots killed many humans in that show. Science fiction author Isaac Asimov predicted back in the 1940s that future societies would need to defy strict laws to control the actions of robots, and now several decades later, One legal expert in the U.S. is arguing that that time has come to contemplate such measures for real. And, I mean, didn't we see a story a while back? And I believe so. They were saying 2020, the Internet of Things is going to be billions. Well, experts also predict that robots will take at least 30% of all the jobs. All the jobs. By 2025. That's only 10 years from now. And we're giving these things artificial intelligence. I mean, think about even the IBM's Watson. I mean, that's pretty far along. Google has its own project going on. I'm sure that Microsoft and a lot of the other tech companies all have their own projects going on. And we are just handing over the ability to control our own lives to the machine. Because, hey, we don't have the attention span of even a goldfish anymore. Ryan Kahlo from the University of Washington School of Law says that the legal system will have to grapple with the rise of robots in society, just as it took decades to adapt to the unique challenges posed by another recent transformative technology, the pesky Internet. Yes. In Robotics and the Lessons of Cyber Law, published last month in the California Law Review, yes, that's real, Lessons of Cyber Law and Robotics, Kahlo argues that when it comes to disruptive and constantly shifting technologies like the Internet and robotics, the law takes a long time to catch up. The evolution of cyber law didn't happen overnight. Lawyers, judges, and legislators had to confront all kinds of social, technological, jurisdictional barriers that they previously had not needed to address. 2 decades of analysis have produced a rich set of insights, yeah, let's see, as to how the law should apply to the Internet's peculiar characteristics, he writes. But in the meantime, technology has not stood still. The same public and private institutions that developed the Internet, DARPA, from the armed forces to search engine Google, have initiated a significant shift toward robotics and artificial intelligence. And don't forget, a few weeks ago we talked about Google's new truth algorithm and rating websites based upon the scans of your content and then comparing them to the quote-unquote official truth as deemed by Google. And then whether or not it's on that truth list will determine where your ranking is for people to find you. According to Kahlo, robotics combines for the very first time the promiscuity of data, where it's everywhere, with the capacity to do physical harm. Robotic systems accomplish tasks in a way that cannot be anticipated in advance, and robots increasingly blur the line between a person and an instrument. And yes, and with the spate of hackings everywhere, like I said, is anyone going to trust anything that's out there now? Well, no, of course you're not. Not the old way of doing things. It's time for disruptive technologies. That's why I'm saying there's going to be a brand new protocol and brand new security protocols and languages that are going to now be shaped because of the quote-unquote insecurity over the last few years of the Internet. And hackers under every bed. But it's going to keep you safe. While Kahlo believes that the legal community's recent experience with the challenges of cyber law will give it significant advantages in adapting to the demands of devising robotics laws, the challenge is still immense. Well, you guys better hurry up, man. 5 years before we have hundreds of billions of devices. Despite his acknowledgement of the very clear physical harm that robots can pose to humans, Kahlo is not an alarmist or a fantasist. Well, good, because I'm not either. He's not warning us about the perils of the impending robo-apocalypse like, oh, I don't know, Stephen Hawking, Bill Gates, or Elon Musk were. No, he's just saying, and that's what it says. He's just saying as optimistically as possible, yeah, of course, with a big smile on his face as he's rubbing his hands together, that you have all these wonderful future business opportunities, that we haven't got the right kind of laws in place to deal with the problems that robots are going to begin to pose. What is that, Mr. Rust Bucket? Oh, my God. When it comes to the technology, this is this guy talking, Kahlo. I find that I'm a conservative. Yes, me too. I would hope that anyone who's deep in technology would be a conservative. This is no shit to mess around with. This is like creating a new life form that we're releasing little by little, and insane mad science by lunatic, narcissistic psychopath at a time into the environment, and those genies are so out of the bottle that we now have enchanted objects. Okay, the next enchanted objects is going to be like a big monster freaking Atlas robot marching down the street in a swarm with all his buddies. Despite his acknowledgement of the very clear physical harm that robots can pose to humans, Kalo is not an alarmist or a fantasist. He's not warning us about the perils of the impending robo-apocalypse. He's just saying, as optimistically as possible, that we haven't got the right kind of laws in place to deal with the problems that robots begin to pose. When it comes to the technology, he says, I find him conservative. Robotics will continue to evolve, but mostly in ways that solve known technical challenges and, yes, reduce costs. Microsoft's former tagline, do more with less. They've been doing that since one of the big busts. I don't know if that was late 90s, could have been even that early, or maybe early 2000s. Do more with less. You will not find any references to hell. Open the pod bay doors, hell, or C-3PO in the pages that follow. And yet the widespread distribution of robotics in society will, like the internet, create deep social, cultural, economic, and of course legal tensions long before the advent of science fiction. And if that does not add insult to injury, we got one more to do before the end here. And actually, maybe two if we can fit them in. If I read fast, we can. Develop safe AI before it is too late. The debate over superintelligent robots and the potential dangers is nothing new, but in recent years, software has developed the speed and capacity to bring us to the brink of creating a machine that could one day prove to be smarter than we are. Academic Stuart Armstrong at Ware, the University of Oxford in the UK, which I believe is where Hawking is, has been setting out the threat of the next generation artificial intelligence and says that programmers must work to make it safe before it spirals out of control. Oh, this is fucking great. Part of the problem is defining exactly what safe means. Yes, that's kind of a subjective term. Robots instructed to prevent human suffering could theoretically decide to, yes, kill the sick and infirm, Armstrong says. And robots told to protect humans might decide to imprison them for their own good. Oh, my God. Oh, this is horrifying, but he's absolutely right. Like I said, it's subjective. What it means to one might mean something completely different to another, especially something with no emotions and the ultimate psychopath with no empathy and global, absolute, exponential power and omnipotent and omnipotent. Wait, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipotent. No, omnipotent and omnipotent. Well, you know what I mean. The robot is going to be like a god, godlike. It'll know everything, know where you are at every instant, and be super intelligent and come to its own moral conclusions based upon its knowledge. You can give AI controls, and it will be under the controls it was given, but these may not be the controls that were meant. Armstrong was speaking at a debate on AI organized by technology research firm Gartner, again, ding, ding, and he said it will be difficult to predict in which direction machines are developing until it is too late. Although robotics could be programmed with a moral code, defining what those moral codes are and how to apply them would be problematic. I mean, this all comes down to absolute what we've been talking about all along is the lack of morals. And when the people who are programming them are all addicted to dopamine and the machine, and we show how that creates narcissistic and psychopathic tendencies, this is pretty scary. The mad scientists gone mad are all psychopaths, and they're the ones who are writing the quote-unquote moral code that doesn't exist into the future overlords of the human race. Says plans for safe AI must be developed before the first dangerous AI is created, said Armstrong. The software industry is worth many billions of dollars, and much effort is being devoted to new AI technologies. Plans to slow down this rate of development seems unrealistic. Yes, remember, because once we've used the machine to create the next generation of machine, it becomes exponential in its growth and its speed. We'd heard an interview with Kurzweil one time where he said what took, you know, so many years in the very beginning to get us off the ground with the current technology and processors is now happening in a very, very short period of time. So we have a race toward the distant destination of safe AI and to get there, outrunning the progress of the computer industry. As we rush to use computing power to fix some of the most intractable problems of our time, we are also hastening the arrival of a software system, Skynet, that can run independently from its creators, Armstrong said. So in trying to benefit from AI, we might be pushing it further than we should. Humans steer the future not because we are the strongest or the fastest, but because we are the smartest, said Armstrong. When machines become smarter than humans, we'll be handing them the steering wheel. And to talk about handing them the steering wheel, this is where we're going to end up today. Google self-driving cars, yes, they're out there. They did lots of testing in California, and now I saw that they were just launching them in Austin, Texas, as well as another test bed. But here, this goes back to our laws. How are we going to use laws? This is one simple example, but I think this last story was pretty compelling as to how robots are going to interpret quote-unquote morals. The Google self-driving car has its first accident involving an injury. Now, if we're really lucky, this is going to load.
Google has revealed that one of its self-driving cars has been involved in an accident for the first time. Its new Lexus SUV was hit by another driver when it stopped at a junction in San Francisco. It was waiting by the traffic lights when a car rear-ended it at 17 miles per hour.
Whoops.
No one was harmed in the vehicles except for some minor whiplash, but the offending car was a little worse off, and its entire front bumper fell off.
At 17 miles an hour, we had whiplash and a front bumper falling off? Holy shit!
In a blog post, Google's Chris Urmson said Google's self-driving cars had been hit by other drivers surprisingly often and blamed it on other people being distracted at the wheel and not paying enough attention on the road.
And of course, it was not the artificial intelligence that was guiding the self-driving car. All right, everybody, that's about it. If you can even believe it, an hour has gone by fast again. Make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. So coming up next, Post-Ignorance Project with Mr. Kevin Blanche. Yes, Kevin Blanche is back. And then stick around tonight, because Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Eastern, we have Mr. Webster Tarpley, this week's show. At 8 p.m., Mr. J.J. Inc. is live. 9, Primer Time with Michael and Nick. 10, a live Geoengineering Watch with Dane and Russ. And at 11 o'clock, S.M. Gibson on Anti-Media Radio. All right, guys. You have an awesome Tuesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.